And it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR, arts and entertainment as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, it's jazz pianist John Beasley. John's received two Grammy nominations for 2025 Best Latin Jazz Album for El Trio, Live in Italy. Also for Best Large Jazz Ensemble Album, Returning to Forever. This is a phenomenal album of Return to Forever songs realized and rearranged for a big band. Again, it's an incredible album. We'll take a close look at Returning to Forever next week. On this edition of KVC Arts, we'll take a look at some previous albums paying homage to Herbie Hancock, Thelonious Monk, and more. That's later in the program. First, a look at some holiday material. John's Holidays Jazz Trio, spelled with a Z, had a performance rather nearby, but that was canceled. So this program reminds you of a show that'll be great if you happen to be near Paso Robles rather soon, or at least a reminder of a really cool holiday release. Even though you may think you have too many already, but this one is certainly one to add to the collection. Music from the John Beasley Trio Holidays release from 2022. Are there any songs, John, with the performance or on the album, which aren't expressly Christmas, but say, of the season? Take, for example, Jonathan Courant on his holiday release, giving us I've Got My Love to Keep Me Warm. Certainly not a holiday tune, but again, fitting for the season, cooler time of year. And I just really thought that was a cool, atypical insert.
Right. No, not on this record, except there's Old Anxiety, which is New Year's.
Yeah.
Right? But it's still part of the holidays, right? I always thought Ray Charles and Blossom Dearie doing Baby It's Cold Outside would be a good holiday season record, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's another good one. I was trying to think of other examples other than the one I stated, so there's that one, too. So that didn't make it to the album. Is that by chance part of the lineup, or do you even know the lineup yet for the upcoming holidays performance?
Well, for the performance, we'll do the music that's on the record.
Okay.
And, yeah, I should throw in something else. Maybe I'll take up your suggestion.
Okay, cool. We'll figure it out then.
And we'll play some other standards, probably. Some holiday blues. How's that?
Oh, sweet. Well, this is something to look forward to, and it's always cool when we get a holiday concert, but then we get some other standards, something that just feels good anyway, but it's not another Rudolph or whatever the case is. You know, we go for the Christmas music, but sometimes it can get old at the same time.
Yeah, I actually started an arrangement that's not on the record.
Let us know.
Let it snow.
Let us know, let us know, let us know, yeah.
Right, but I'm going to do it super fast bebop.
Oh, wow.
Kind of like Bud Powell used to play Cherokee.
Wow.
He played it like ding 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 ding. Sort of halftime, but with the bass player and drummer playing double time.
That is interesting.
So I'm gonna go da 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 like that.
Oh, fantastic. Wow. And is that going to be coming through from your left hand, or is that going to be laid out by the bass and drums? I'm not sure. Well, what is the lineup, by the way, for this performance?
Piano, bass, and drums.
Okay, so it's a trio then. So is a lot of that driving bass going to be coming from your left hand, or is it going to be the bass and the drums, and then you come out with the piano? You know what I'm saying there?
Yeah, the bass and drums will be walking.
Okay, there it is.
Normal bebop kind of walking.
Gotcha. Way cool, way cool. one more from the album, 12 Days of Christmas. This one is such a, it's a repetitive song, lyrics as well as melody.
For sure.
And so, yeah. You know, the lyrics, at least when we're singing it, at least give a slight variation with each verse. But as an instrumental, I would think that you would have had to have really pored over this one to figure out just how to give some variety, a slow build or rhythmic changes, just anything. You couldn't have just played this one and then realized, oh my God, it's the same 12 times.
No, mine's different every time. There's a harmonic change, a reharmonization, a different drum groove, a different instrument playing it, vibes playing it, or piano playing it. But the hard part was recording it and keeping track of what, how the number of verses, you know, the chart, the music was like 12 pages long or something, you know. I didn't want to repeat it, like you said, it would have gotten very boring, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's easy to lose track of.
Probably won't play that one unless we get the audience to sing it. That would be the only way because, you know, like we'd have to read the music and, you know.
Yeah, no, that would be fun. Well, it'd be an easy one to get them in on.
True.
And I suppose I hadn't thought about how hard it would be to keep up with that. Beyond the five golden rings, that's the one that always hooks you back into, oh, that's where we are in the song. Five golden rings. Okay.
It's
always a cool tune to hear and to sing when you're doing carols or whatever the case is. But then I've come across songs before that are really interesting lyrically, but then when you start to play them, it's like, my God, it is the same thing 12 times. And so there just had to have been a study on that one. I had to get inside your head for that one.
Like 99 bottles of beer on the wall.
Oh my God, yes, yes. Yeah, you know, this only goes back a few years, but when you decided on this album, what then was the first song that you just knew you had to have as a part of it? Whether it's a favorite or whether it's, you know, your grandma's favorite or the most feeling encompassing thing of the season, something that draws you out every time. What just had to go in there first if you were going to make a holiday record?
I like that version of Silent Night. It's very cozy. Mm-hmm. It's like the candles are going, you're about to fall asleep, you know. Christmas Day is the next day. The kids are asleep. You know, everybody's in their pajamas. It's got a sensual kind of vibe to it to me. I've always loved that arrangement.
Your take on it, it's a really nice, I don't know, I want to say a warm by the fireplace kind of thing. And I always thought of that as a lullaby, but with that, I really feel like feeling in a small living room with a fire going. And it's a feel-good kind of thing. And not just feel-good inside, but you're suddenly getting warm again. You don't need that sweater anymore because you've got this arrangement, I suppose. Well, how about this one then for the performances coming up? I'd love to ask about some sort of surprise folks can look forward to for the holidays performance, but I guess that would make it certainly less of a surprise, more of a spoiler alert. So how about an enticement then? A new arrangement you mentioned earlier for perhaps Let It Snow? Maybe a special guest? Shots bought for the first 15 patrons, anything. How about some enticements for the upcoming performances?
Musically, yeah, we always have surprises, and we're a jazz trio. So, yeah, the record is great. That was one performance of that material. Mm-hmm. And what's coming up will be the same material, but slightly different just because it's a different day, different evening. We're feeling different. It's 2 years down the road. The music evolves.
No, seriously.
So there's all kinds of surprises to have here.
going on to a few of your recordings. Now, it may be a different approach by the time that you got to Returning to Forever, but on the earlier albums, like, say, the first Monk album, not the Monkestra, but the 10/10.
Oh, you're going way back.
Oh, I'm going way back. Oh, my God, yeah. I have to explain that my history in jazz is a weird one. It started, I mean, as a broadcaster, that is, it started on the fusion end of things before going into straight-ahead mainstream stuff, and then after that, elsewhere into the other forms of jazz with big band and whatnot. So along with that, I've appreciated, though, people like, well, Thelonious Monk and Herbie Hancock, a few of these things. So definitely a few questions about that. So with that in mind, say the earliest Monk albums or the one for Charlie Parker, did it start because you wanted to do a tip-of-the-hat kind of thing? Or were you really just noticing how much of their music you already had in your arsenal? And then it's like, oh my God, I've got enough for a disc if I just rearrange Ornithology. Now we've got Bird.
Let's see. 10/10, the first Monk record, is a duo record.
Yeah.
And Steve Gardner, the guitarist on that record, had the idea, and he got the record deal to do that. Yeah. So he reached out to me to do that. So that was not my idea per se.
Okay.
But he knew that I was playing a lot of Monk, because I was in a band called Thelonious with Bill Nylinger a few years before that.
Okay.
And there's a record called Thelonious that I'm on. And of course, growing up and listening to jazz and playing from an early age, I was in the Monk early on. But those were the first two records I did of Monk's material. With the 10/10 record, the duo record, I realized at that point how pliable, if you will, Monk's music is. You know, with a duo, you could change tempos on the spot. You can retard, you can accelerate. You know, you have a lot more freedom because it's only two people, right?
Yeah.
Interacting. It's more space.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized that some of his tunes sound great slow. You can speed them up, reharm. There's lots of reharmonization and interpretation. I could put myself into it. For some reason, I connect with his material in a way that it exposes my voice, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then, okay, fast forward, what, 20 years, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Monkestra, I was learning Sibelius, which is a notation software. Instead of using pen and pencil, like I used to do, I was learning it, and I decided to do epistrophe, just because I knew the tune really well.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I wanted to experiment with some harmony, and, you know, I didn't have anything to lose. I was just going to learn this program while I arranged this tune. And that was an epiphany for me, because I really discovered I could put an Afro-Cuban groove on that tune. I stopped. There's a big cadenza. I could take it through a journey, if you will. And so I kept writing after that. I had about four tunes, I think, and I called a bunch of friends to meet at the Union to read through some of the stuff I had written. And it sounded pretty good, you know. I was like, wow, this is cool. The musicians had fun doing it. And I kept writing two more. And I went to the Blue Whale, which was the club here in L.A. back then, and booked a weekend and brought the band in and videoed it, right? And some of those videos that are on YouTube are our first gig, you know?
Oh, that's
And
so
I had
nice.
Only had six tunes, I think. I had six tunes. And so we repeated the same set twice, you know? So that's the story of how Monkestra. And then eventually I went in the studio and paid for it myself and recorded those six tunes, shopped it around for about a year, and Mac Avenue signed us to the trilogy, the three records. Finished up the first one, and by chance, you know, because I started writing for this Monkestra, I think, 2013 or 14.
Oh, wow.
Maybe it was 15, somewhere around now. And I wasn't even aware that Monk's centennial celebration was 2017.
Oh,
right?
Wow.
I didn't even know. The record company recognized it. And so then they put the second record out a year later in time for the centennial. And then we toured. I think we did 40 gigs that year all around the world.
It was intended from the beginning that there were going to be three?
It was a three-record deal, yes.
I wonder if that made it easy in a way that, you know, sometimes you record material and you've got too much for an album. That stuff on the cutting room floor you may hope to use again, but if you're continuing to do a Monk thing with a few albums, you don't have to worry so much about that. You've got, okay, it's just material for the next one. It's a bit of a sidebar, but why not? Here you are. how did that one come about as far as which songs? Did you record 30 songs and divide them up between three albums? Or was it a case of coming up with a flow for one album and then you wouldn't even think about the next one until you're done with the first? How did the whole process go with that for you?
I had already recorded 6 of the tunes on my own, so I put those on there. So I guess I had the other 3 sort of locked in. And then we went in again and did another session, maybe 3 or 4 tunes, I can't remember. And then for the second one, you know, I wasn't expecting another record, so I had to write pretty quick. Because the record company, you know, they need 7 to 9 months after it's recorded to manufacture, do promotion, artwork, all this stuff. So, yeah, I wrote pretty quickly, you know. But I was on a roll then. I kind of knew what was up. I didn't have, you know, extra tunes or arrangements, but I knew that, you know, there's some other Monk tunes that I definitely wanted to do and ones that I had been playing for a while. So that's Monkester Volume 2, which it's evolved a little bit since Volume 1, which is what it should do. And then Volume 3, which is called Monkester Plays John Beasley, was a few years later, maybe 2 years later. And unfortunately, it came out during the pandemic, August of 2020, which is the worst, right?
Yeah, right at the height.
But on that record, I think there's 4 or 5 Monk tunes, 4 or 5 of mine, and Come Sunday by Duke Ellington. Okay. Now, the reason why the Duke Ellington tune is on there is because Monk was heavily influenced by Duke Ellington, as we all are. Yeah. But his piano playing, to me, is a lot like Duke Ellington, the way he plays piano. The arpeggios, the rhythmic style. So anyway, it's sort of all related.
I really never thought about comparing the two of them. I mean, I knew about the influence, of course, but comparing them, thinking about how they play, especially when you, say, watch video, Duke, I think, was more engaged with the audience as he was playing. Monk was so much, I mean, he was into the keyboard as he was doing it. Well, then he'd stand up and kind of turn around and twirl about every so often before sitting down and playing. It's always interesting to see as well on those. But wow, okay, that is really cool. I'm going back with a different ear on both Ellington and Monk. I don't have the liner notes in front of me. Where did Blue Monk fall on those 3 albums, by the way, the Monkestras?
Oh, Blue Monk is what we call the processional.
That's on volume
1.
Okay.
And that's the New Orleans second line version of, well, it's got 4 or 5 Monk riff tunes all kind of layered in there. But it starts with Blue Monk, I think. Straight No Chaser's in there.
Cool.
A bunch of different riffs all kind of marching together. You know, because I don't know if Monk ever got a second line funeral or not. So we gave it to him.
Wow. Oh, wow. Nicely stated. And so, yeah, now that's going to be one that I'm going to have to go into. Oh, there's, oh, well, you needn't, and just keep on going. Wow. Okay, this conversation is creating a lot of, at least for me, and I hope for other people, opportunities and reasons to go back and listen with a new ear, as I mentioned a bit ago. I'm David Fleming with you for KVC Arts. I'm speaking with jazz pianist John Beasley. More at johnbeasleymusic.com, and more as KVC Arts continues. Find many past KVC Arts through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Back now with KVC Arts, I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, I'm speaking with John Beasley. Beyond a bit of holiday music with really cool arrangements, we just heard about some rearrangements of Thelonious Monk, and now some reimaginings of Herbie Hancock. Going into this with one of John's called Bedtime Voyage. It's clearly Herbie Hancock's maiden voyage, but with that title. John, I've been poring over this, and beyond Maiden Voyage, we have, it seems, at least elements of Herbie's Tell Me a Bedtime Story. You're not just playing with the title.
Good ear. That's definitely a mashup between Tell Me a Bedtime Story and Maiden Voyage.
Nice. Okay.
That's what it is. It's a mashup of the two. The rhythm of Maiden Voyage, dun 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 dee 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 dee, right?
Yeah.
Starts out with that, but it's the chords of the turnaround of Tell Me a Bedtime Story. When Bedtime Story goes ba boom boom bing dun 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 bing dun dun dun, right?
So
I took those 4 chords and played the maiden voyage rhythm with it. And it just so happened that the melody of Maiden Voyage worked over those descending chords from Tell Me a Bedtime Story.
That is just too cool.
And then instead of going to the bridge of Maiden Voyage, I go to the bridge of Tell Me a Bedtime Story.
That's where it fell, and that's where I was wondering, so is this a new arrangement? This is a series of quotes, and I just... Okay, time and time again, these are ones that people need to go back to if they, you know, say know one of the tunes and not the other, or they know them both and they just need to listen again. I wonder if it's as simple as turning off the left channel, then you can get it. I doubt it would be that simple. I hope it's not. I want people to listen more and more.
No, it's not it.
Well, staying with Bedtime Voyage, I mean, just as an example, we could do this with other ones, but I think that this one wasn't, say, written out very much. I mean, beyond general charts, I suppose. Tell me if I'm wrong, I would think that the recording would be very much like a live session. You know, you're stating the theme, improvising, and then, say, nodding to the next person to take their solo, and it goes around like that. Was this very much close to live-to-tape kind of thing?
Oh, definitely, yeah. It's a jazz trio record, basically, except for the tunes Voyage. Yeah, we recorded that, you know, as a band, and all the solos are live, and it's a jazz record.
Yeah. I mean, others, they come back to it every so often, like it's a great feat to, hey, I'm going to do this kind of live. And it feels like with a lot of jazz records, this is the natural way to go, because you're not going to be writing it out. It's not going to be transcribed directly or precisely per se, more like the general charts, and then talking about the feel that we want to accomplish, and then go, Roy.
Yeah, it's social music. Music conversation. I mean, the Muckasser records were all live, too.
Okay.
That record, my Positively record, is done like that. The Christmas record, Holidays, was done in 3 hours.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
We didn't rehearse. We went in the studio. Of course, I had ideas about the arrangements. I had that all mapped up. And we actually even mixed it live. It's a live two-track record.
Right.
It's got spirit, you know, something about knowing that this is it, you know, brings another level of intensity and concentration to the session.
Truly.
And that's the way jazz records were recorded for, you know, up until 1970 or so, you know, it's all live to two-track.
Well, it makes sense that it really should be that way. Kind of a joke about it is, say, if a person gooses a note, just do it 3 times and it sounds like it's on purpose, and then we call it jazz. You know, that's really not far off, and that gives it an advantage to playing live, because it adds for those live, on-the-moment kind of discoveries. I called it goose note, now I call it a discovery, but it's the same thing at times. Another one from Letter to Herbie, Vein Melter. Originally, this was the last tune on amongst the most seminal fusions out there, Herbie Hancock's Headhunters. Now, it's also the easiest going track on there, as opposed to, say, Chameleon or Watermelon Man.
I think Vein Melter is part of another mashup on that record. There's a tune that Roy Hargrove plays on. The Naked Camera is the name of the movie. In track 5, I use that melody, but with the groove, it goes into this bridge of Vein Melter. And then the last track of the record is the vamp from that other version. We just made another tune out of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yet another one that I have to go back to. That's a real advantage to doing these interviews, having these kinds of conversations, missing the things that I didn't catch the first time, or just hearing the behind-the-scenes stories. I love Inception type of questions and the stories of how things came together. And I love the mashups too, especially the ones that I didn't quite catch, like this one that you just explained to me. So now I have to track down the Naked Camera as well. I mean, the earliest Herbie Hancock stuff that I have is, I guess, maybe 64 or 5. Maiden Voyage, that goes back to then anyway. Well, okay, one more from that. Three Finger Snap. So this would be a reimagining of Herbie's One Finger Snap from his Empyrean Isles, another one from the early to mid-60s, let's say, his Blue Note years, I'll put it that way. Is this one the Three Finger Snap? So is this another mashup? I'm missing the other part of it that I can't figure out why those other two fingers involved. Or is this just, hey, you've given a new sound, a new feel to it, and so you're just changing the name slightly?
It's the same sort of structure as One Finger Snap, right? It has the 4-bar line, and then I think, what is the 16-bar blowing improvisation, and it kind of breaks down this line. That's the only thing that's related to it.
Okay.
But it's an original composition.
Okay, so it's the same.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's close, but, you know, it should be close because it's a Herbie tribute record, right?
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just another way of giving props to the genius of Herbie Hancock.
Oh, without a doubt. For this edition of KBC Arts, I've been speaking with John Beasley. We've been hearing about his albums paying homage to Herbie Hancock, Thelonious Monk, and more, as well as his Holidays release. Next week, we'll get a close look at his 2024 release, Returning to Forever, the music of Return to Forever, reimagined for big band. This album got him one of his two Grammy nominations for 2025. Keep up with John through Instagram and Facebook, as well as johnbeasleymusic.com. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to John Beasley, and here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Zach Mays, Sandy Hodela, and Shireen Awad. Many past KVC Arts can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Be sure to check out our calendar of events in the region at our homepage, kvcrnews.org, or you can go directly there. kvcrnews.org/calendar. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year. Go to kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.